Okay, so traditionally the first night of the summer is when we do like a Shir Psicha. Shir Psicha is just like to introduce the topic. So we're going to be learning a lot about Bishul B'Shabbos. So I thought it would be a good way to introduce the topic just by learning a little bit about the value of learning Hilchos Shabbos in general. There is a must read. The Mishnah Brura in Chelek Gimel has an introduction to Hilchos Shabbos. The first page, right before the page of Mishnah Brura, he only has an introduction in two volumes of Mishnah Brura. He has an introduction in volume one of Mishnah Brura to introduce the Sefer Mishnah Brura, but he felt it was worthy to write another introduction just for Hilchos Shabbos. So what we're going to do tonight is just go through what the Mishnah Brura says in case you've never read it before. If you have read it before, it will be good chazara. If you haven't, then you could read it tomorrow morning after hearing everything outside. It's always good to see it inside. So if you happen to have a Mishnah Brura, you could follow along as I'm going through it outside. I'm not going to read it inside, but you could follow along inside if you'd like to. And then, if there, time permitting, which I assume there will be, we'll get into a little bit of an introduction to the idea of learning Hilchos Bishul in particular, and maybe even get into a discussion of some of the basic concepts in Hilchos Bishul B'Shabbos. So first, the Mishnah Brura discusses just the chashivus of keeping Shabbos, the importance of observing Shabbos. He points out that the Torah itself tells us that Shabbos is the basis for all emuna. Zachar Yom Shabbos L'Kadsho, Sheshes Yom Tavo. The pasuk tells us that you should keep Shabbos. Why? Ki Sheshes Yom Masa Hashem Masa Shemayim V'Yas Haaretz. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Shemayim V'Haaretz in 6 days. Well, what does one got to do with the other? Apparently, when you observe Shabbos, you are expressing a sense of emuna that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. And the importance of Shabbos is reflected in just the number of times the Torah tells us about Shabbos. The Torah warns us about Shabbos, says the Mishnah Brura, 12 times. Chazal say, Mishamer Shabbos, Kilu Mekayim Kol HaTorah, that if you observe Shabbos, it's like you observe the entire Torah. Kol HaMechal Shabbos, Kilu Kafar B'Kol HaTorah Kula. If you're Mechal Shabbos, it's as if you were Kafar B'Kol HaTorah Kula. It should be there. So Chazal say that if a person is Shomer Shabbos, it's as if he kept the whole Torah. If he's Mechal Shabbos, if he was Kofer Mechal Torah, and that's because it's the basis of Emunah. And if you don't believe in God, then you don't believe in Torah. Meaning, not that you don't believe in Torah, the whole Torah would be meaningless without Emunah. You know, there's a discussion whether, Meir just discussed this, whether Emunah B'Hashem is a mitzvah or not a mitzvah. So what? Those who hold that Emunah B'Hashem is not a mitzvah just hold that, it's not so important, you don't really need to do that. I know it's late at night, but it's not that late, right? Everyone holds it's really, really important to have Emunah B'Hashem. It may be too important to be listed as a mitzvah, because if you don't believe in God, then there's no such thing as a mitzvah. Mitzvah is very often mistranslated in English. How do people translate mitzvah in English? They say a good deed. It is not a good deed. A good deed is a good deed. A mitzvah is, say it right, you said, a commandment, right? Something that you must do. Well, there's no such thing as a commandment if there is no commander, right? So you got to believe in the commander first, and then there could be a commandment. So when you express Emunah B'Hashem, so that's Kol HaTorah Kula. So how do we express Emunah B'Hashem? By being Shomer Shabbos. When we're Shomer Shabbos, we're being Moda B'Kol HaTorah, we're being Ki'ilu Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kula. When we're Mechal Shabbos, Ki'ilu Kofer B'Kol HaTorah Kula. Mishnah Brura goes on to say that the Medrash Rabbah in Parshas B'Shalach says that we see in each Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim, that Shabbos is Shkula Keneged Kol HaMitzvos, which is a fascinating idea, the idea that it means more to us when something appears in every element of Torah, you know, in every category of Torah. Like, I would have thought that it would be stronger if it says it three times in the Torah, right? But there's a certain strength to having the idea appear in Torah, then again in Nevi'im, then again in Ksuvim, as if to say, whatever your favorite limud is, you're going to find this idea, there's no escaping this idea, that Shabbos is connected everything. In Torah, when Moshe Rabbeinu delays in teaching Shabbos, Hashem says, Ad ana me'antem lishmor mitzvosa v'torosai, and then, Ru'u ki Hashem nasan lechem Shabbos. I gave you Shabbos, so why aren't you teaching my mitzvos and Torahs? What do you mean? I'm just not teaching Shabbos. Yeah, that's the same thing. Shabbos is all the mitzvos and the Torahs. In Nevi'im, the pasuk says we rebelled from keeping all the mitzvos. That's what all the Nevi'im are about, pretty much. Ve'yamru bi beis Yisrael b'midbar b'chukosai lo halachu. The Jewish people rebelled against me in the midbar. They didn't follow my laws. What does that mean? Shabsosai chilulu. They didn't keep my laws. What does it mean they didn't keep my laws? They were mechal Shabbos. So being mechal Shabbos is a rejection of all the laws. In Ksuvim, in Sefer Nechemiah, va'al harsina yiradta v'dibarta yimayim, and then says, v'shabbos kodshcho datlem. Kodesh Baruch Hu came down in Harsina, you know what he gave us? Shabbos. What do you mean he gave us Shabbos? He gave us kala Torah kula. Yeah, yeah, that's the same thing. Shabbos is keneged, it's shakul keneged, kala Torah kula. And how bad of an avera is it to be mechal Shabbos? So there's a measuring stick that we can measure how serious an avera is. Mishpura tells us that what's the measuring stick to know how bad an avera is? You could simply look at the onesh for the avera. If you fail to do a mitzvah saseh, you don't put on tefillin one day, what's the onesh? What does Beis Din do to you? Absolutely nothing. There's no onesh from the state. They'll force you to do it. But if there's still time, because of course they want you to do the mitzvah, but if the zman of the mitzvah has passed and you haven't done it, the Beis Din does absolutely nothing. Lo saseh, you violate a typical lo saseh in the Torah, the onesh is, unless it's one of the exceptions, malchus. Right? Then there's a little more severe than that. What's more severe than a regular lo saseh? Misa bidei shemayim, kares. Worse than that, actual misa. And how many types of actual misa in Beis Din are there? Four, and what's the worst of the four? Skila. And what do you get for Chol Shabbos? Skila or Sreifet, which was Machlokas, but Mishavur doesn't quote the other day. Right? What do you get for Shabbos? Skila. So you see how he builds it up, right? Chol Shabbos is the very worst thing. And other than Avodah Zarah, which we know Hashem is not a big fan of Avodah Zarah, other than Avodah Zarah, a mumar for any other avera is not considered a mumar l'kol Torah kula. Let's say a guy just rejects shatness. So can we not trust him on shchita anymore? Can we, can we not count him toward a minion anymore? Is there anything that he's excluded from because he has rejected a particular mitzvah in the Torah, or he has repeatedly violated a particular avera in the Torah? Other than Shabbos and Avodah Zarah, he's not considered a mumar l'kol Torah kula. Shabbos, a person violates it several times publicly, he's treated like an ovid chavim. What does it mean like an ovid chavim? If he lives in a Jewish neighborhood, we would have to be socher reshus from him in order to make an eruv. You know, we do this in city eruvin. You need everyone in the same that's in the enclosed in the eruv to sort of join together in a partnership. So what we do is, how do we join all the Jews in the neighborhood together in a partnership? We have a box of matzahs that you're all part owners of. You didn't know. You're all part owners of a box of matzahs, unless you live in a neighborhood without a neighborhood. But that's unlikely. Right? So you're all partners in a box. Someone was kona, a box of matzahs for all of you. You're all partners in that. But if there's a guy that lives in the neighborhood, you have to be socha reshus from the guy. You have to rent reshus from the guy. So we actually go to the governor, not the governor, the mayor of the city, or the police chief, someone who has the ability to break into anybody's house and is legally allowed to do that. I guess the police, if there were cause, would be allowed to do that. So we go to the police, and we actually are socha reshus from all the goyim, you know, he represents, and they do this in city Erevin. So it would have to be a goy or a mechal Shabbos b'faresia. Wow, it's quite a madrega. If a mechal Shabbos b'faresia shechts, even if there's a Yisrael Amin al-Gavav, meaning there's a professional shochet, who's Yirei Shemayim, watching over him, making sure he's doing everything perfectly, and the guy is skilled, he does a perfect shechita, that animal is a nevela. It's absolutely not kosher, because the person himself is not a bar zvicha. We don't consider it to be a kosher shechita. He's a mechal Shabbos. The Rambam's Lashon, in the 30th paragraph of Hilchos Shabbos, HaShabbos v'avodos kochavim, both Shabbos and Avodah Zarah, kol achas mishtei and shkulos keneged shar kol mitzvah satorah. Specifically, Shabbos and Avodah Zarah correspond to every other mitzvah in the Torah. V'ashabbos hiya os shebein akorosh baruch hu beinenu li'olam. Shabbos is the sign between us and Hashem. Lefichach, kol over al shara mitzvos, harei u'b'chal rishei Yisrael. Look, it's not good to violate anything, says the Rambam. If you violate any other mitzvah, it's as if you're including the rishei Yisrael. Av'machal Shabbos b'farasya? Harei Kovid Avod Chavin. That's like doing Avod Zara. Ushneim Kovid Chavin L'chol Devrayim. And that means across the board you're considered like an Ovid Avod Zara. Okay, so that's very negative. What's the great Suchos of Shmirah Shabbos when you observe Shabbos? What are the benefits that one gets? So the Mishnah Berurah points out, and he starts getting a little Kabbalistic over here, how many mitzvot aseh are there in the Torah? 48. 248, right, good. So I'm reminded Rabbi Sabalowski once said that he asked his shir, how many mitzvot aseh shazman grama are women actually pater from? Mitzvot aseh shazman grama. So he said, first, like, guys were guessing numbers that didn't make any sense. 3,000! He's like, okay, let's start with this. There are 248 mitzvot aseh in total. Okay, so now some subsection of that is mitzvot aseh shazman grama, and some subsection of that are mitzvot aseh shazman grama that women are actually bothered from. But in total, there are 248 mitzvot, you're right, it's about 6%, it depends how you count. But 248 mitzvot aseh in the Torah. So, Kabbalistically, the assumption is, says Mishnah Berurah, that 248 mitzvot aseh in the Torah, well, the Gemara already says this, correspond to the 248 evarim in the guf, right? The ramach evarim. Every limb in our body corresponds to a different mitzvot aseh. But we never have, like, a chart that shows you what's connected what, right? So, like, there's a big difference between the tip of my left pinky, that's an aver, and my heart. I enjoy having both of them, but if I had to lose one, I'm pretty sure I know which one I would choose. There are important evarim, there are less important evarim. There are mitzvos that correspond to the tip of my left pinky, and there are mitzvos that correspond to my brain and to my heart. And says the Mishnah Berurah, when it comes to Shabbos, Shabbos is one of those mitzvos, along with Avodah Zarah, that corresponds to, well, Avodah Zarah is not a mitzvah, that corresponds to something major, to a major, major limb. Now, of course, you don't want to lose any limb, and the Mishnah Berurah points out, that's the meaning behind the pasuk. We say, Ki uchayecha va'orech yamecha, that when we observe Torah, that is our life, that is arichus yamim. That means that la'asu lavo, we're going to get up, and we're going to have our bodies, and our body, the life force in the different parts of our bodies will be sustained by the mitzvot that we did that correspond to that part of our body. Which means, if whatever mitzvah, the middle part of my left pinky, corresponds to, if I failed in that mitzvah, so then Tchias HaMesim comes, Lasa Lava comes, and I have all my other limbs, but that one is not intact. I don't know if the top part would be, and it would just connect with the bottom, or it would just float. That would be kind of cool, but there's something missing, and what's missing, so imagine a person doesn't put on tefillin his entire life, so he says he'll have a tchias mason, but it'll be there for all to see that he doesn't have a left arm, because he was nisrashel in the mitzvah of tefillin. He says Chaim Vital and Shara Kedusha and the Gra and Mishle say that the chavala will be eternally part of the body, and that's what the pasuk calls means sof davar hakol nishma. You think, you know, you can get away with things. In the end of the day, everyone's going to see. Everyone's going to see where you failed. So Shabbos, the zchus of Shmir Shabbos Kilchsa, helps to sustain the most important parts of our body, and it helps be mochel kol avonosav, all of a person's averos. The Gemara says that anyone who's meshamer Shabbos Kilchaso, afilu chata kedar enosh mochlin lo. Even if he sinned like the generation of Enosh, he gets mechila. Shneamar, Ashrei Enosh Yasazos, Uben Adam Yachzikba, Shomer Shabbos Mechalulo, Vishomer Yadom Yasos Kalra. And the Gemara Dashans, Al Tikri Mechalulo, Ella Machul Lo. That if a person acts like Enosh, still Shomer Shabbos, Machul Lo. He'll have a Mechila if he's Shomer Shabbos. Wonderful. So it's a really great, terrible thing to break Shabbos. Really great thing to observe Shabbos. The Gemara says that it's very challenging. Because, of course, there are 39 Avos Melachos of Shabbos. That's why, when we talk about Shabbos, what's the famous sefer that Rav Neubert wrote, Shmir Shabbos? Kilchasa. Where did he get that phrase from? So now you have, like, once he did it, everyone wrote a sefer, something Kilchasa. But that's fake. He actually got this from Chazal. Chazal called Kol HaMishamer Shabbos Ki Hilchasa. You don't have that by other mitzvahs so much. Shomer Shabbos Kil Chasos. So says Mishmur, you know why? Because there's so many alachos. There are 39 melachos, and there are Mamari Chazal, that each Av Melach has 39 toldos. And that's just on the Doraisas. There's so much. So how does a person achieve the madrega of getting every detail of Hilcha Shabbos right, of observing Shabbos kil chasso, all 39 melachos with all the details? How does a person get to that point where he can get it right? Says the Mishpura, there's only one way. You have to learn Hilcha Shabbos and constantly review Hilcha Shabbos, because otherwise you lose it. It's too much. There's too much detail. And then he says, you might say, no, the way to do it is find a good book of Musar or Chassidus or something that will inspire you about the malachim that you create when you observe Shabbos, or about the beauty and the elegance and the grandeur of the day, and then you'll be inspired to observe Shabbos. He said, yeah, if you do that, you'll be inspired to observe Shabbos, but you'll have no idea how to observe Shabbos. So it's a great idea, it's just going to get you nowhere. That will be the most frustrating. It's almost easier not to be inspired to observe Shabbos than to be inspired and then be clueless as to how to observe Shabbos. So this is all the Muslim in the world is not going to help you if you don't actually study the halachos of Shabbos and constantly review them. And he says that the Medrash Mishlei tells us, Lodas chachma u'musr. Im yesh biyado shel adam chachma, hu yachal lelamid musr. If you know the chachma, then you can learn the musr. Meaning, if you know what does the chachma mean in this context, the halacha, then you can learn the musr, because then the musr will inspire you to preserve that halacha. But ve'im biyado shel adam chachma, ein yachal lelamid musr. If you don't have the chachma, then the musr is going to be useless. So there are several examples where there is a good halachic solution to a problem that arises, says Mishmur, but just ignorance in the halacha will cause you to make the wrong choice and will cause you to be mechallel Shabbos. And he says, I'll give you an example. You can find the most inspired person in the world, and he wants to connect to Shabbos, and he wants to sing some miros, and he's going to, he's going to really feel Shabbos. And I remember once we had in the yeshiva that I may or may not be affiliated with, where it was on Friday afternoon, like at the last few minutes of yeshiva, they had a, everyone came down to the lobby next to that lady with the whatever, the tall, what is that? The big thing on the wall with the guy. Yeah, it used to be a lady, but then we got more tzenua and we changed it to a guy, an operation. But so everyone was gathering in the hall, and they were all dancing and they were singing. They were singing Shabbos Kodesh, right, or something like that. I don't remember the exact which niggun they were singing about Shabbos Kodesh, but one of the Shabbos Kodesh niggunim, and it was like whatever. And like that night, those seniors who were doing it went to some horrible chil Shabbos party, like mamish that night. I mean, you can have a person who's like, yeah, all is fine. It's a little shallow if it's not backed up with something. We need to back it up a little bit. And the way to back it up is we learn about Shabbos, and we make every effort to observe Shabbos. So it says in Mishmur, I'll give you examples of cases that will happen, and a person who's uneducated will almost certainly violate Shabbos. So it's interesting, because the Mishmur was written 100 years ago. So the examples he gives are not the most practical, common 21st century examples. But he says, a person wakes up on Shabbos morning, and he sees that his brand new chickens and geese that he just bought ran away because they're not used to being domesticated. Right? That's happened. Come on, don't say it hasn't happened to you. Right? Shabbos morning. So what's he going to do when he sees that they ran away? So he may violate Seder D'Oraisa. They're running all over the place. He's going to go. What's he going to do? Bring them back home. That's a violation of Melachas Tzad. Why? Because he's trapping them. What else might he do? Oh, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to violate Seder. I don't want to... Ask a guy. This feels like it's a big enough need to ask a guy. I'm allowed to ask a guy to shut off my light so I can sleep. I should be allowed to ask a guy for the 10,000 chickens that are about to be lost, right? What's that going to be a violation of? Amir Lakum. But there's a simple solution. You just have to have some knowledge in order to know the simple solution, says the Mishmura. What's the solution? Ask the guy to bring the geese into a place that would not be considered, say, the Daraisa. What would be a place that's not considered, say, so you have to know that if the enclosure is big enough that you can't catch it in one lunge, then it would not be said to Daraisa to put it in such an enclosure. So have the guy put it into an enclosure, lead them into an enclosure, but not a tiny enclosure, not into little cages. Because if they're in a small enough place and you catch them in one lunch, that's tzad midaraisa. But you could do amir la'akum for tzad midrabanan when it's a hefsin meruba. All you got to do is know that. You just have to know. Or he says, and this actually happened to me once, the tablecloth ignites on fire. Right? So it wasn't in my house. We were away for Pesach. And we paskin that when you're in a hotel for Pesach, and or Shabbos for that matter, and they set up a table on the side outside of the dining room where nobody ever is, with 1,000 candles. And all the women say a bracha on those candles. So we paskin that's a bracha levatala because no one uses those candles. And it's not really, doesn't really help for Shabbos lights. So my wife said, what am I supposed to do? So on the first night of Yontif, I just tell her, turn on the electric light in the room, you know, before Yontif and or before Shabbos. And that's your hadlakas nero Shabbos. And that's what my wife does. But what do you do on the second night of Yontif? Right? How do you light? Because you can't turn on a light on an electric light in Yontif. So what do you do about Shabbos candles? They don't let you light candles in the room in a hotel. Anyone ever been to a hotel for Yontif? No one? Yeah, I'm sure. Right? So what happens? So everyone lights on that table there, right? Because everyone thinks you're supposed to, right? So the only place that they don't have that, in the YU Shavuos program, 800 people came to the YU Shavuos program, and they all followed Rav Shechter's Pesach. Zero people lit candles on the second night of Yontif. Just unbelievable. But so one time in the hotel, I said, you know what, if the candles are on the table, even though Rav Shechter would not agree with this, but at least this much I think, if the candles are on the table and we're sitting around the table, that you could light on Yontif. Rav Shechter would not agree with that, but I'm just saying that. And if the candles are on the table, so my wife lit candles, she asked the hotel, can we put candles on the table? They said, yeah, sure, no problem, because the one rule in a Pesach hotel, if you're ever away for Pesach, the one rule that everyone there is told before the guests come is whatever the guest wants is okay. Everything is fine. They're there to serve you. So they said, yeah, sure, light the whole place on fire for all we care, whatever you want, as long as you pay the bill. So we had the candles on the table, and one of my children, who shall remain nameless actually, because I don't remember which one it was. One of my children was opened up the box of matzahs and flipped the cover of the box over a little bit, and the cover of the box was right under the candles, and it lit on fire. And so here we had a fire on Yontif, like right there in the middle of the table, and it was like raging. So what do you do? Right? So what do you do? So a person might extinguish the fire. The truth is, in a crowded dining room where it's mamish pikoach nefesh, because if a fire gets out of control and can happen quickly, you probably can put out the fire. If it's pikoach nefesh, you definitely can. But in a typical circumstance where you could just leave and you don't have to worry about thousands of people, it's just you and your family, you could just leave and it will only burn your little place down and everything else will be fine, it will just be a loss of money, strictly speaking, you're not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. But who's not going to put out the fire in that situation? Imagine you just say, oh, it's only my house. So you walk away and let your house burn down. Who's not going to be so people are, Chazal say, Adam Bahul Al Mamono. Person is very concerned about his money, meaning his entire house. So he'll put out the cap, but that's a violation of Melach Daraisa Mechabda. It happened to be in our situation. I called the waiter who was at the next table taking orders from people, and I said, excuse me, sir, there's a fire on our table. And he said, one moment, I'm taking people's orders. I'm like, there's a fire on our table! And then he finally came up and he put it out. So, but that would be the answer to do Amir Lakum, or if you learn Hilchos Shabbos, you'll know that you can pour water around it so that the fire won't spread. You just can't pour water on it. Or, for example, you could have two types of meat and you only want one of them. So you pick out the ones that you don't want and put it away for later. No, that's a violation of the Melacha of Borer. You have to know the rules of Borer. So all of these things, says Mishmur, these are basic, typical examples that come up all the time. We try to plan for every situation, but there are new things that come up every Shabbos. And if you don't know what you're doing, you're almost certainly going to violate Shabbos. And he says, then Mishmur says, this is so true in so many Melachas of Shabbos, but, and he writes these words, Ubiprat, Beinyan Bishul, Ushihia, Vahatmana, Hu Hilchsa Rabasi Ma'od, Bahar Bechiluke Dinam Anogea Lamaisa. says of all the areas of Melech HaShabbos, the Dinim Da'oraisa and the Rabbanon of Bishul are so detailed, so many, so easy to make a mistake. And he quotes Rabbi Yonis Naibshitz in the Aros Tavash, who guarantees that it's Efshar Klal B'Metzius, it's impossible in reality, She'inatzal Miyisr Shabbos Im Lo Yelamid Kol Adinim Al Bar Yom Hetev Hetev, for a person to be saved from an Isr Shabbos if he doesn't learn all of the Dinim really, really well. So why is it that so many people don't learn Hilcha Shabbos? Mishpura says he thinks it's for two reasons that people are not fully educated in Hilcha Shabbos. Number one, it's really hard to learn it from the Shulchan Aruch, because it's almost impossible to understand what the Shulchan Aruch is saying unless you have a very strong grounding in the Gemaras and the Rishonim. And people don't have time for that, for a very strong grounding in the Gemaras and the Rishonim. And number two, he says, there are also just a lot of machlokas in Hilcha Shabbos. And people don't always know how to posse. Even if you see that there are multiple opinions, you don't know what to do with those opinions. So says the Mishnah Berurah, that's why I've come to the rescue. And that's what in every sefer the Chafetz Chaim wrote. He only wrote a sefer that he thought there was a major need in Klal Yisrael for that sefer. He didn't write a sefer just because he had some chidushim, so you know he's given some halacha shiurim and he didn't know what to do next, so he decided to write up a few halacha shiurim. No. He wrote a sefer if he felt that Klal Yisrael needed it. That's why he wrote a sefer for soldiers in the Russian army, because they had no idea what to do. He wrote a sefer that had never been written. He created a category of halacha called Hilchas Lashon Hara, which no one ever heard of before. Yeah, is a daf or two of Gemara here or there, but it doesn't, you know, it didn't exist as a topic. And he created an entire sefer with rayas from Gemaras and Rishonim and Achor, everything. Mishavur only wrote Svarim that were absolutely necessary. He says, this is absolutely necessary. And what I'm going to do for you is, he says, I'm going to explain the logic of each halacha and its basis in the Gemara and the Poskim. I'm going to give you a clear conclusion on any issue that's disputed. And in challenging halachas, when you get to an area, a specific halacha that's very difficult, I'll write a brief introduction to help you understand the Shulchan Aruch and that halacha. And he did that. And he says, I'm also going to deal with modern shaylas, and he did all of that, but even the Mishnah Berurah is very hard. It's very difficult to learn Hilchos Shabbos straight with Mishnah Berurah. And we have more modern Sfarim that made it even easier to learn Hilchos Shabbos. But the Mishnah Berurah concludes his introduction with the hope that Chaburos will form to learn Hilchos Shabbos together, that maybe guys will get together over the summer and learn Hilchos Shabbos, which in turn will definitely bring the Geula, he says. Because if the Jewish people would just observe two Shabbosos, we'd have Geula. Well, why hasn't it happened yet? Because we don't really know how to observe Shabbos. Even those of us who are Shomrei Shabbos don't really know how to do it properly, so we need to really study it in order that we could bring the Geula. That's the Mishnah Berurah's introduction to Chela Gimel. What about Melechus Bishul in particular? So why is it so important to learn Bishul? So it's more of a challenge than you would think, because, you know, if let's say... I don't know, pick a malacha. Not Bishul, pick another malacha. Osir Shtei Batei Nirid. Excellent example. So if I want to stay safe from running afoul of being Osir Shtei Batei Nirid, I'll just do what I do every other day of the week as far as Osir Shtei Batei Nirid, and it's not going to happen. Right? Meaning you can avoid it. You could just avoid the whole issue. Bishul, you can't avoid the whole issue. Why can't you avoid the whole issue? The Baal Amar, right? Why can't you just eat cold food? The Baal Amar writes in the beginning of Parakira, that we have an early takana that we're supposed to enjoy Shabbos with warm food. And if you see someone doesn't have warm food on Shabbos, you need to investigate what his hashkafos are. And if he dies, let non-Jews bury him. Meaning, we're dealing with a person who probably had very foreign beliefs, because if he didn't show a kavod to Shabbos by at least trying to have warm food on Shabbos, something's wrong. There's something missing in his Yiddishkeit. So we can't just say, I'll just eat cold food. I remember the first time I ever gave a shiur on Bishul B'Shabbos, I was the assistant rabbi in Shari Tfila in Lawrence. I was, 22, 23 years old, and I was giving a shiur for... men and women, but it was really man and two women. There were three people at the shir, and I gave one of them. One of them was an old lady who was knitting until she fell asleep. but the other one came over to me afterwards, and she said, "I never knew you're allowed to have hot food on Shabbos." I'm like, "What?" She said, "I never knew that that's even a possibility. Like, we just always have cold food on Shabbos." That was very surprising to me. So I didn't say, you know, like, you have to check your yichas, your ashkafas, you know. But like, that's a problem. The Rush in Perakira, in the context of the minhag to be lenient, like the Shita of Hananya and Shehiya, which hopefully we'll get to in a couple of weeks, the Rush writes, V'Yisrael adukim b'mitzvah sonak Shabbos for yishmu la'achmir. You're going to try to be machmir in certain inyanim of Bishul the Shabbos. The Jewish people are so connected to the mitzvah of Oneg Shabbos that they're not going to listen to too many chumras. But that's the way the Rush puts it, because we love Oneg Shabbos so much. Meaning, and that really is a reflection of something that Rabbi Razman likes to talk about all the time, that every chumra in one area, or many chumras in one area, tend to be a kula in something else. And Rabbi Razman has a beautiful shir on chumras, on when it's appropriate to take a chumrah, when it's not appropriate to take a chumrah. And he has a number of exceptions of when chumras are bad. But one of the basic ideas is that if sometimes you think you're being machmir, and very often, when you think you're being machmir on ben adam l'makom, you're actually being mekel on ben adam l'chaveira. Right? You're going to take a chumrah that, only chalav Yisrael milk, let's say you assume that la halacha is like Ramesha, that you don't need chalav Yisrael. But you want to be machmir to have only Chalav Yisrael. But, you know, the rest of your family loves their Hershey's chocolate. But you insist it can't be in the house because it's too much of a taiva for you. So that's a wonderful chumrah, bin adam l'makom. But bin adam l'chaveru, if you're imposing it on other people, so that's that you have to be careful. You have to know when a chumrah is appropriate, when it's not. So what melech are we learning about this summer? Meleches? What? Bishul, right? So that's not so clear that's what it's called. The Gemara in Shabbos of Ayin Dalet Amud Beis asks on the Mishnah, Shavak Tana, because the Mishnah doesn't list Bishul as well. There's a Mishnah, Ayin Gimel, that lists all the Lamitas Malachs of Shabbos, and Bishul's not there. What is there? Afia. So the Gemara asks, I don't understand. Shavak Tana Didan Bishul Sam Manim, Dava B'Mishkan V'Nakat Ofeh. Instead of Bishul, why would you say Ofa instead of Bishul? Which strongly implies, the Gemara's Kasha implies that Bishul is the real Malacha. What's the Nukudah Samachlokas? What's the issue whether Bishul or Afiyah is the real Malacha? What defines a Malacha of Shabbos? Is a Malacha of Shabbos that which was done in the preparation and building of the Mishkan? Or is a Malacha of Shabbos that which was done in the ongoing running of the Mishkan? Which would be which over here? When did they do Afiyah? The Lechem Apanim, right? So that was, in fact, the Sidur of the past, the 11 Malachos that are the bread preparation Malachos. The last one is baking. But that was done every single week in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. But Bishul was the Bishul Sammanim, the making of the dyes that they dyed the curtains with. That was done before they ever built the Mishkan in the first place. So the Eglei Tal in Malachos Ofeh quotes the Urayim that Afiyah is the Av Malacha because Lechem Apanim was baked. Rashi on the Mishnah Dafayin Gimel says that Afiyah was Lohaya B'Mishkan, Zol Shaykh al B'Pas, Upas Lo Shaykh B'Malacha Mishkan. Bread's got nothing to do with the Malacha Samishkan. It's really all about Bishul. So that Lechora is the Nekudas HaMachlokas. Now, just a few basic concepts, just for the last 10 minutes, to introduce us to the ideas that we're going to be talking about. We're going to start with the Malacha D'Oraisa of Bishul. So first we'll do the major D'Oraisa concepts, and then hopefully in a couple of weeks from now we'll get into the Surman D'Rabbanan related to Bishul. And so we'll maybe go through some of those concepts. D'Oraisa concepts. Concept number one, Yad Soledes Bo. A person does not violate the Yisra of cooking a liquid unless he heats the liquid to the point that it's yad soledes bo, that it's hot to the touch, that he recoils from the touch. The Chachamim in the recent generations have a major machlokas just how hot Yad Soledis Bo is. Rav Moshe holds that it's got to be at least 110 degrees. Rav Shlomo Zalman did a very interesting cheshbon and experiment, which we'll learn about, where he said it can't be any less than 113 degrees. Rav Aaron Cutler and Rav Shach holds 120 degrees is Yad Soledis Bo. Different shitos, but the point is, you haven't violated bishul on a liquid unless the liquid is hot enough that it's yad soledis bo. Interestingly, the Darkei Tshuva quotes that it used to be the way they would determine yad soledis bo is they would just stick their hand in the water and see if their hand recoils. That's not so pashut that works. Why is that not so pashut that works? What? Oh, so first of all, different people are different, right? There's a kind of person called a female. And such people have incredibly strong skin on their hands, or just no nerve endings in their hands. I don't know how it works, but my wife is like, can you just take that pan of cookies out of the oven? And I'm like, I'll put on body armor, I'll put on like 8 layers of gloves, and I'm like, and they drop it all over the place. Just give me that. And she takes it with her bare hand and puts it on the counter. And when I was younger, they said, it was my mother would say, oh, mommies can do that, but I don't think it's just mommies. I think it's just women are able. I don't know. So it would depend. It would depend on the person, right? Not only would it depend on the person, it's also it's got to be measured by when you're not really expecting it to be so hot. But if someone's like, here, this is so hot, I bet you can't touch it. And then so when you're expecting it to be hot, you'll be able. Your tolerance will be a little bit higher. So it's very difficult to do that measurement. A second major concept, Machal Ben Drusai. Machal Ben Drusai is specifically a concept that's important to know when we talk about not being Mevashel a liquid, but by being Mevashel a solid food. Because there was this fellow, who's a famous character now in Jewish history, in Jewish lore, called Ben Drusai, who was apparently always on the run, and whenever he didn't have much opportunity to cook his food, because they would always catch up with him, so he only cooked it till it was barely edible, and therefore cooking it to that point, the point that Ben Drusai would eat it, that would be a Melacha D'Oraisa of Bishul on Shabbos. So there's, of course, the Machlokas Rishonim, at what point we considered the foods to have gotten to Machal Ben Drusai. The Rambam holds half cooked. Rashi holds one third cooked. We'll have to discuss that Be'ezras Hashem when we get to it. Shulchan Aruch just paskins like the Rambam, but the Mishnah Brura quotes Rashi Shita and says that you're certainly allowed to rely on Shita's Rashi in the Shasat Chak. Then there's another critical concept: Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. What's Ein Bishul Achar Bishul? Once something is cooked, you can no longer violate the Melacha D'Oraisa of cooking it. So wait, once something is cooked, I can no longer do anything wrong with it on Shabbos? No, you can still do things that are wrong with it on Shabbos. Certainly if you like bow down to it, that would still be Avodah Zarah, right? But even just warming it up without the proper precautions may run afoul of Yisurim D'Rabbanan. But Yisurim D'Oraisa, once something is fully cooked, there's no longer an Yisurim D'Oraisa of Bishul. There's a machlokas, whether machlokas Rishonim that we're going to have to learn about, whether that applies only to solid foods or to liquid foods as well. And there's also machlokas Rishonim, whether it applies to cooking something that was once baked or roasted. Meaning, let's say you take a challah. A challah was baked, and you want to stick it in your boiling hot soup. Your boiling hot soup is now going to cook the challah. So is that a violation of bishul? Or do you say, no, ein bishul achar afiyah? So we'll have to see. That too is a machlokas Rishonim. What about, once we're talking about soup in a pot, kli rishon, kli sheni, iroi kli rishon, iroi kli sheni, kli shlishi. So just to be familiar with the terms, a kli that was heated by fire, even if it's not still on the fire, is called a kli rishon. So you had a pot that the food was made in, and it's still hot. It's assumed to have the level of intensity of heat that it can cook things mida oraisa. If you pour something out of that kli rishon, that's called iroi kli rishon. And the kli that you pour it into is a kli sheni. The Gemara tells us, generally speaking, kli sheni isn't mevashel. It's not hot enough to be mevashel. The Rishonim discuss, what about iroi kli rishon? Right? Kli rishon definitely cooks. It's very intense. Kli sheni doesn't cook, except for rare things that are called kalei abishel, where it does have the ability to cook. What about iroi kli rishon? When it's on its way, you pour something from a kli rishon from the kettle over the tea bag or over something that is raw. So the Shitas HaRi, quoted in Tosfos and Daf Mem Beis, says that Iroi Kli Rishon is the same as Kli Rishon, it is Mevashel. The Rashbam, quoted in that same Tosfos, says, no, it's Kli Sheni, it's not Mevashel. Tosfos has a compromise. What's the compromise? That it's Mevashel, but only a Kedei Klipa. Only the outermost surface. It's not going to be Mevashel beyond the outermost surface, and that's what we accept in the Mishnah Berurah and Simshon Yirches, Sivkat and Lamed Hay. We accept the Shita of the compromise Shita that Tosfos quotes. In a Klisheni, we said Klisheni is generally not Mevashel, but there are certain things that are called Kale Habishel. And there's also a discussion whether only liquids do not get cooked, or even solids in a klisheni do not cook. I mean, let's say I didn't pour hot water from my urn into a klisheni. I took a big piece of those tall Yerushalmi kugels, right? Like six. So does it really matter, like what kli the bottom surface of it is in? Whether it's on the first kli or the second kli, the heat is contained within the kugel itself. The whole thing is like this heftza of heat. So there's a major discussion whether a davar gush, whether something that is a solid food, whether it makes a difference if it's in a klisheni or not. There's also a major discussion, what if you have something that's kalei habishel, that's easily cooked, and therefore you're not allowed to cook in a klisheni, but you put it in a klishlishi? What would be the classic example of that? Huh? Challah is an example of that. What's the classic example of that? Tea, right? When you make tea on Shabbos. If you hold that you can't make tea in a kli sheni, if you hold that way, which Mishnah Berurah certainly holds that way, Rav Moshe certainly holds that way, Rav Soloveitchik's grandfathers both held you're allowed to make tea in a kli sheni. They both held it's not kalei habishel, which is an interesting idea. Rav Shapter writes in Nefesh HaRav, Rav Soloveitchik said that his grandfather made tea in a kli sheni. So I asked, which grandfather? I mean, they were both great, tell me the Chachamim, one a little more famous than the other, but you know. He said both. He said that he yelled both. So I said, Rebbe, do you rely on that? You ever see anyone make tea in a klisheni on Shabbos? Like a generally observant person? Like, I don't know. I've never seen it in my life. So Rav Shach said, only when I'm thirsty for tea. Okay, so so I guess he relies on it. But a lot of other people do not rely. So whether something, let's say you have something that you're not allowed to cook in a klisheni, like most poskim would assume tea, you're not allowed to cook in a klisheni because it's kalei habishel. Can you cook it in a klishlishi? Major machlokes haposkim. Rav Moshe, yes. Mishnah Berurah, no. Then there is still within the category of bishul d'oraisa hagasa, stirring of food in a kli in a kli makes the food cook faster and may also constitute an issur d'oraisa of bishul. The kolbo has an unusual chumrah when it comes to hadasa, which is quoted in Shulchan Aruch that even if the food is fully cooked, you're still not allowed to stir it because we're afraid that maybe some part of it is not fully cooked and you're therefore making it fully cooked. Some basic concepts from Midrabanan in the last minute that we have. There are three basic concepts from Midrabanan. Hopefully we'll get into them in much greater detail. Shihia, Hachazara, Hatmana. Shihia means leaving food cooking from before Shabbos into Shabbos. Hachazara means taking food, even if it's fully cooked, and putting it on the fire on Shabbos. And hatmana means insulating, wrapping food from before Shabbos to make sure that it retains its warmth. So these are some of the basic concepts. Now we have a month to try to figure out what they all mean and to figure out the details of these concepts. And Be'ezus Hashem, we will begin that process tomorrow morning.